Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, about whom we are incredibly possessive. He joins us weekly. The films, Toy Story 4, Midsommar, and The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which I'm going to be renaming. Hi, David. How are you?
Okay, Jill. How you doing?
I am fine. It's over to you, CB.
Yeah, well, there we go. All right. So I will now take charge of this expedition. Our three movies today take place in three different places. And the first one, Toy Story 4, takes place in the realm of the imagination. This is, of course, the fourth movie in the Toy Story franchise, which is not one of these great overblown franchises with like dozens of sequels and things. This is just a thing that's been chugging along for quite a long number of years now, and it all started with the original movie Toy Story, a Pixar animation, which is, you know, just a delightful film, really one of the best of the sort of family animated films that was probably ever come out of Hollywood. And then, you know, there was Toy Story 2, which I remember as being pretty good, and Toy Story 3, which, you know, was good. You know, I didn't think it was as great as some people did, and now we have Toy Story 4. So why do they keep doing this? As one of my fellow critics said not long ago, it is probably because these movies pull in enormous amounts of money. But also, there really do seem to be a whole lot of possibilities in these characters and in this situation. And so Toy Story 4, I think, is a very, very nice addition to the series. It's really quite a lovely film. It's been getting ecstatic reviews, and I think it deserves extremely good reviews, if not exactly ecstatic ones. So again, the premise for anybody who has been living on the planet Mars for the past few decades is that we have a bunch of toys, and when there are human beings around, they have to like lie around and not move, and they can't talk unless they have a voice box and somebody pulls the string in the back. But when there's no human beings around, they can walk and talk and move around and talk with each other and do all the kinds of things that movie characters do. So that is the basic situation, as always, in this series. And now what we have is the beginning of it deals with the idea that toys sometimes have to leave their owners. You know, toys belong to kids, and the kids grow up a little bit and they no longer like this particular toy, or they grow out of the world of toys generally, and then the toy is going to have to move on to some new world in some way, and we see different ways in Toy Story 4 that might happen. One might be given to another kid and then enter another nice household with another nice kid. Toy Story 4 is very bourgeois. There's no, you know, particular domestic problems or poverty or anything like that involved. You know, it's an escapist fantasy. Or you might end up in a secondhand store, someplace like that, which is also the fate of some of the toys in Toy Story 4. So we have quite a lot of movement. There's quite a lot of action in Toy Story 4, and probably most importantly, and what people are talking about, there's a new character named Forky. A little girl at the very beginning of the movie goes off for her first day in kindergarten, and she's kind of not very happy about this and is insecure and doesn't know if she's going to like it here and all of that, this little human girl. And she makes a toy out of a fork and some pipe cleaners and stuff like that, and this turns out to be a new character in the movie named Forky, who follows the same rules as the other toys, has to, not behave alive when human beings are around, but joins with the other toys. And funny thing about Forky is that for the first part of the movie, since Forky is made out of trash, a discarded plastic fork and pipe cleaners and things like that, Forky loves trash and always wants to get back to the trash and is always trying to jump into the wastebasket to be back with the trash where one is warm and cozy and feels at home. Eventually, they get Forky over that particular neurosis, and Forky becomes really just one of the gang. But there is a whole big plot in this movie about another toy, a very deceptively sweet-appearing doll with just an adorable little innocent face who is the opposite of innocent and who has a damaged voice box. When you pull a string in the back, the voice doesn't come out right. And she meets the main character of the Toy Story franchise, Woody the cowboy, voiced by Tom Hanks, and would like to get a hold of his voice box to replace her own faulty one, even though Woody's voice box is sewn into him. And this adorable little innocent-looking doll is not innocent at all, and she has some hench persons, some enforcers who are ventriloquist dummies, who are very ominous characters and might be a little bit scary for the very, very youngest viewers of Toy Story 4. Anyway, I had a good time watching Toy Story 4. There's a little bit too much action in it for my taste. I prefer the dialogue scenes where the characters really interact with each other in sort of, you know, in verbal ways. But it's really quite a delightful movie, and I think that any kid is going to like it, and I think that any adult who takes a kid along is going to like it, because it's just a charming movie, as always. By the way, directed by one Josh Cooley, who really seems to know what he is doing. Good movie. Next movie, totally opposite end of the universe, Midsommar. We now have a movie that takes place, not entirely, but mostly in Sweden, and it is a horror movie. So we have three very different genres today. So after the very innocent G-rated Toy Story 4, we now move into the R-rated comedy of Midsommar, which is basically Midsummer, but takes place largely in Sweden, so we get the Swedish spelling. What we have here at the very beginning of the movie, we meet one of our main characters, who's really the protagonist of the movie, a young woman named Dani. She's in her 20s. And at the very beginning of the movie, she suffers a horrible family tragedy, which really traumatizes her. It's pretty awful. And if you didn't know it when you went into the theater, you'll find out at the beginning of the movie, this is a horror movie, when you see what the family tragedy that Dani suffers and which traumatizes her. She has a boyfriend who is a graduate student who is trying to decide what to do his dissertation on, and the two of them end up going off before Dani has quite overcome this horrible trauma. It'll probably be a long time before she really overcomes that. They go off to Sweden with some friends, one of whom is a Swedish young man, and another of whom is another American young man who has decided to do his dissertation on this isolated community, this little sort of commune community off in rural Sweden. So anyway, our main characters, Dani and Christian, her boyfriend, go off to Sweden with these other young people around their own age, including another young man who was doing a PhD dissertation. And they end up pretty early in the movie in this isolated commune in the middle of rural Sweden. And it's all just delightful. All these lovely, friendly people walking around in these white outfits, and the Swedish summertime sun is shining, and everybody's getting ready for their joyous midsummer celebration. But we know from the beginning that this is a horror movie, and we know that these people are not as innocent as they seem, and we know that something sinister is going to be afoot here, and that turns out to be the case very emphatically. So that is what Midsommar is like, for a sort of a somewhat classic horror film that it sort of follows in the footsteps of this famous movie called The Wicker Man, which is, you know, again, about an isolated island. And, you know, the more you know about the inhabitants there, you find out that their ancient traditions, which they follow because it gives their life meaning, are really have an enormous sinister side, and all sorts of bad stuff happens. And that is pretty much the pattern that Midsommar follows. Midsommar was written and directed by Ari Aster, who made his feature directing debut just about a year ago, roughly, with a really, really good horror movie called Hereditary. Very, very good. And if you like horror movies and you haven't seen Hereditary, it's definitely one to catch up with. Really, really good movie. Very, very well acted, especially by a wonderful cast headed by Gabriel Byrne and Toni Collette. Midsommar is a pretty good horror movie, but it definitely does not live up to Hereditary. For one thing, Hereditary was really very original, had all kinds of interesting twists. Midsommar, it not only follows that sort of Wicker Man pattern, but I found it pretty predictable. Sometimes it seems to be almost deliberately giving away things that are going to happen later in the movie, what maybe the writer-director thought of as artful foreshadowing, really sort of sets you up for an anticlimax. Oh, well, I knew that was going to happen because of that earlier thing that we saw a while back. So it is not a very original film, and it follows a whole lot of just very familiar horror movie tropes within it. Also, I must say the acting is just not very good. As the main female character, Dani, Florence Pugh, is you know, she's good. She gets the job done. I didn't find her exactly charismatic. As her boyfriend, Christian Jack Rayner, just left me flat. It's a very important role, and I just don't think that he does anything interesting with it. Some of the secondary characters, there's better acting, but the two problems with Midsommar are rather flat acting and the fact that it's just not a very original story, and it is not developed in a very original way. Now, on the good side, it's beautifully photographed, as Hereditary was. Very interesting, sort of mysterioso, insinuating camera work that I found quite fetching. And some very powerful imagery, especially when you get to the last part. There's some imagery involving flowers, of all things, which I just found very, very striking and really sort of eye-dazzling and very, very interesting. So as horror movies go, my verdict on Midsommar is kind of mixed. I wish it were more original. I certainly wish the acting were a lot better. But on the other hand, there's some very, very good imagery in it. And generally, it sustains its horror movie momentum, even though it's a bit too long, going on 2.5 hours. If you like horror movies, it's a movie to see in the middle of this. You know, go see it at Midsommar. After all, that is its title. Final movie, The Last Black Man in San Francisco. This is a film which has been getting an enormous amount of buzz, and it is pretty well deserved. It's a very good movie. The Last Black Man in San Francisco, interestingly, was directed by a white filmmaker, a guy named Joe Talbot. This is his feature filmmaking debut. And he also wrote the story for it along with a guy named Jimmy Thales, who is an African-American man, and whose actual life experience, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, is sort of based on. So we have, and actually he plays the main character, whose name is Jimmy Thales. So we have Jimmy Thales, the real Jimmy Thales, who plays the fictional Jimmy Thales, who is somewhat based on his own real actual self, and who co-wrote the movie, and so that lends it a sort of interest. Now, The Last Black Man in San Francisco has, the beginning of it is sort of, you have to sort of figure out exactly what's going on. There are these two young African-American men. There is Jimmy Thales and his best friend, whose name is Mont, and Montgomery Allen is his name, but he's always called Mont. So Jimmy and Mont are sort of skulking around this gorgeous old house in San Francisco. It's old, it's big, it's stately. It's one of those that the architecture alone makes The Last Black Man in San Francisco well worth seeing. This beautiful house. But they're very concerned about this house. They don't live in it. Other people live in it, but white people live in it, but they're always skulking around and complaining. Look, the paint is chipping. When you're looking through the window here, you see the wallpaper's coming down. They're very upset about the state of this house. So when the occupants are around, these two young people, Jimmy and Mont, constantly, they sneak into the house. They fix it up. They go outside and they paint up the trimming around the window. They do things like this. And then when the owners come back, the occupants come back, they have to scurry away into the shadows because they're not supposed to be doing this. So what is going on here? Well, it turns out that this house used to be in the family of our main character, Jimmy, and he feels a tremendous amount of loyalty to this house. He wishes the house were still belonged to his family. His grandfather, he says, over and over and over, built this house back in the 1940s. Now, you know, white people have taken over the neighborhood, or at least white people have taken over this house, and they really wish it were still theirs. And that is really what the movie is about. It's about the traditions of San Francisco, especially the African-American traditions of San Francisco, which of course are not as well known as the white traditions of San Francisco. It's about the idea of a family heritage. It's about idea of what can happen to a family over the years, especially when things like racial prejudice and racial discrimination and racial bigotry are involved, etc. And we meet various older generation people in Jimmy's family as the movie goes by as well. So The Last Black Man in San Francisco has this very, very interesting story, and we have these two young men who are trying to reclaim Jimmy's house, and then when the house does in fact end up, it looks like it's going to go on the market and it's no longer being occupied. This is a huge transition in the plot, and also throughout the whole story, Mont is writing a play, and in the last part of the movie we finally get to see this play that he's been writing. So we have a sort of a wheels within wheels kind of a setup here. The Last Black Man in San Francisco is a very, very well-acted movie. Jimmy Thales is a very good actor, and Jonathan Majors, who plays the other main character, is really really good. And we have some very, very fine people in the supporting cast. I'll mention Danny Glover and Thora Birch, various others. It's a very, very well acted movie. And as I said earlier, the architecture alone makes it really worth seeing. It's just spectacular. Not all gorgeous architecture, because the movie's in part about how a city can fall on hard times just like a family and just like a person can. But there's a lot of gorgeous stuff in it. The problem with The Last Black Man in San Francisco is the last half hour. It's about 2 hours long. I found about 90 minutes of it to be sheer pleasure. The last half hour gets into strenuous uplift. It's just trying to raise our spirits and make points and be socially constructive, and I just found it works way too hard at that. And the movie really lost me for about its last half hour when it just tried to get socially constructive. And again, I just found it kind of strenuous exercise in social constructiveness. But much of the movie, in fact, most of the movie, is just sheer wonderful visual pleasure, terrific characters, marvelous looks at San Francisco. Overall, had a great time at the movie. Just wish the last half hour were a little bit more upbeat and fun to look at, as the first 90 minutes of the movie are. So that is my extremely varied Midsommar story this week, Jill.
Varied it is, David Starrett. Films in Focus. The films Toy Story 4, Midsommar, and The Last Black Man in San Francisco.